Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Packham, joined this evening by Matt Knight.
Hello!
And that's
no one else.
It.
We've lost them all. Everyone's nammed.
Everyone's gone. This is the first day that NAMM is open. You would have heard, if you listened to the podcast in chronological order, you would have heard our episode about the Matt and Joe's visit to the Music Man factory. And if you're a Patreon subscriber, you would have caught what was going to be the next episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast. Which
potentially one of the stupidest, most ridiculous episode we've ever recorded.
Yeah, so if you... last night, obviously, was our first night. Well, it was my first night here, so I landed after an 11-hour flight and caught up. And by the time I was here, Joe was already drinking, and we caught up with the internet's Mary Spender, who was enjoying a few drinks as well. JD Short as well, who you would have heard from the Music Man episode. He was also here enjoying some drinks. And
me, I was enjoying some drinks.
Matt was enjoying
some drinks. You enjoyed a drink?
No, I didn't. Didn't drink anything yesterday. Huh. I had two mouthfuls of that giant tall can of beer that was left here and then remembered, oh yeah, I wanted this because I wanted a cold drink. And there was nothing else here, but actually beer is pretty gross and I don't really like it anymore.
Impossible Burger.
And then, so we then came here and recorded a podcast. And if you're a Patreon subscriber, I wouldn't say you're in for a treat.
You're in for a trick.
You're in for a trick, definitely, definitely. Talked about some Fender and some Line 6 and Yamaha stuff, but it's Patreon worthy, I think. It's quite it'd be good for Patreon.
Well, it was main feed, and then we realised
it needed to go in the Patreon.
I think you have to pay for this one.
It needs to be in the paywall.
Well, then again, you're like, you just paid for this one.
Yeah, yeah. Interesting. An experiment in how perhaps not to do a podcast.
Yeah.
But good fun. When Joe's back, I guess we'll go again in a slightly more sober way. We'll talk about Line 6 stuff.
Yeah.
Because we haven't actually talked. Maybe we should do that. The plan for the podcast tonight is that we're going to talk about what Matt... Joe and I saw on the first day of NAMM.
Yeah, Jay's been, I guess we should say Jay's kind of...
Jay's out.
Tied up.
Jay's fendering basically the entire time.
He was having fun on the booth today with his products.
Yeah, we did see him this morning. He showed us a bit of the new Bluetooth stuff and the some new in-ear headphones, which is his domain. And also, obviously, we saw a load of Fender stuff that we're going to talk about. But just for the main feed, and while Joe's not here basically drooling and boozed out of his brain, let's talk about the new Helix effects processor from Line 6, because you guys went and saw it a bit early at the Line 6.
We did.
It wasn't the factory, it was the Calabasas HQ, right?
Yeah. So I don't know if that's where they always work, because you interviewed Marcus from Line 6?
Yes, Marcus Ryle, yeah. So, that's the HQ of Line 6.
It was a really cool office, actually. They have a big clock that is a giant pod.
Oh, nice.
But no, we went in and checked it out, and I was super impressed, because the thing is, the Line 6 HX Effects, I think is what it's officially called, is basically a Helix minus the amp modelling. And I was like, you've basically made the perfect product for everyone who is never going to buy a Helix.
Well, I mean,
you're basically like everyone who is never going to buy a Helix, because people like me who are never going to use an amp modelling product, not because you're against amp modelling, just because you would never use it.
Yeah.
But you like the effects and you like things like the M series. They've gone, well, why don't you just take the amp modelling out, and then, you know, you've basically got a Helix without it. All the scribble strips are there, all the routing, external effects loops, MIDI, USB, editor. It was a great product. Didn't get very much time with it, unfortunately. But it did get... And I thought it was dead easy to use, the same kind of Helix thing. Touch-sensitive buttons, which I think are cool. Only really if it's kind of not at your feet, I guess.
I guess, to me, it seems like a worthy and very timely successor to the M-Series.
Yeah, so they said the M-Series is staying, but they said the big announcement for NAMM, which I really liked, was software version 2.5, which introduced new bass amps, a Friedman model, and a couple of other amps.
So this is to the existing Helix, stuff.
And to the HX. Mm-hmm. And they've done what they called the Legacy Series, which is every 4 pedal they ever made, all of those effects. So DL4, DM4, MM4, FM4, and the reverbs from the Echo.
Is the AM4 in there? That's what we all want to know.
The amp modelling.
The red one.
No.
I wonder what one of those goes for now, because obviously...
I don't even see them.
They're not very good. I mean, it's... I say not very good. It's the amp modelling from Pod version, like the Pod 2, yeah. I think, in one of those Stompbox modellers.
Talking of terrible pedals, we should just say, like, we also somehow stumbled across a Digitech Crossroads in the drawer of one of the brands there. And they were like, yeah, it's a bit of a joke that it's in there.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah. I love that joke has caught on. Not necessarily because we've been going on about it, but just because I think the time is right now where people who are like... around guitar shops in the early 2000s are now like, oh, what was bad back in the day? Yeah. And the Digitech Crossroads is definitely up there.
But I mean, you know, Line 6 are the perfect... you know, we've said it on the podcast before, they are the brand that are great at repurposing tech. You know, taking something and really using it.
And some people would say that's kind of to their detriment in that you do see various iterations of a similar thing. But at least they do... You know, there's always a purpose for something that they're doing. And like the HX seems like that.
Yeah. My only downside to it, because I was like, oh, maybe I could use something like that in replacement of like an Eventide H9, because it's got the extra buttons.
Yeah.
It was much bigger than I thought it was. And it is like, you wouldn't have anything else on your pedal board. You'd have an expression pedal.
Yeah, I haven't seen one.
You might have a couple of drives for the external loops or something, but you wouldn't use it as a replacement for like an H9 or an M5 right now.
Yeah, I've not seen one in the flesh yet, but I'm assuming it's kind of a similar size to a Nova system. No, what was the smaller one?
The Nova system.
Yeah, what was the G system? G system. Yeah,
it's a bit smaller than the Nova system.
Okay, fine.
The only thing that I thought was the editing was quite good if you kind of just want controls on just the fly with the knobs and then it showed you on the screen, but like doing in-depth like rerouting was really complex on the screens because they like split the signal across the scribble strips, so you're looking at like a fractured puzzle and then you're trying to like piece it all together. But I did have something in there where you could move the effects easily just by like touching the buttons once again, which I think is cool. But obviously if it's on the floor, I'm guessing you can just do it with your feet. But it was really nice to have all the legacy pedals in there because I was saying, you know, I love the rack units. I've got the rack units. They're like, yeah, basically they're exactly the same sounds. It's just that we've got a better processor now. We haven't altered the algorithms. They're just processed slightly better.
Yeah. Like anything that's got the FM4 in it, I'm totally up for that.
Yeah. Yeah. I said to her, I was like, I remember going and buying one from Denmark Street when I was like 15 and it cost me like £400 with the expression pedal. It also had external amp switching, which I thought was quite cool. It's two expression pedals or two stereo outs for external amp switching, or one or the other.
And it's like £500, something like that?
I think they said £599, but the street price is not official yet.
Right, okay.
I think that's what's gone out, but they're like, it may vary. And I think it's landing in stores in Europe February, and it's available by North America from today.
Okay. Oh, well, it's out already.
It's out already.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's how you do a product launch.
Yeah.
Nice.
So that was very cool, and they were really cool guys. It was a cool office, and then we did the Yamaha thing, which was amazing as well. I guess maybe we're probably going to go and see Yamaha at some point.
Yeah, we should talk. We'll talk about that later this week, I think, who want a more coherent version than we delivered on the Patreon.
Yeah, because I think there's going to be some stuff happening with a couple of the people that we met. So I think we'll probably do something later in the week.
Definitely, definitely. So today we started out early, early-ish, and the queues to get into NAMM were bonkers.
And
this
morning.
I was
so desperate for the toilet when I saw the queue. I was like, oh God.
Yeah, it was probably like, what, 20-minute wait, something like that? Maybe half an hour?
Yeah, the thing is, I think the show's bigger this year. I mean, the actual floor layout, so I guess like just in a bit of background, this year it's not very fractured.
Yeah.
Like on previous years, it's been really fractured. Like you could see Orange Amps, and then if you wanted to go and see something else, it could be like the other side. I remember doing like Hall D to Hall C. It was like a 10-minute walk.
Yeah.
This year, all fretted instruments are on one side. So actually everything kind of felt less crowded because there wasn't as many people like running around manically. Everyone's in one area of the room. But yeah, it was like a 20-minute wait to get in. They check all your bags for security reasons. But once we got in, you know, it was kind of free.
Yeah.
Free roaming.
I would say we've done about 10% of the things or of the guitar area, the fretted instrument area.
Yeah, we actually did the smart way, did the supermarket way, and started in the corner, and then we're like, and we were going like, we'll go up and then we'll turn around and come back to the other side, and we still missed bits.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, we like would look back and we're like, oh, but we haven't, how's this happened? We haven't been down there. Like, I don't understand.
And so many crazy brands.
Yeah.
Stuff I've just never seen or heard of.
Yeah, definitely.
And they've got like relatively big booths. I'm like, mental.
Yeah, yeah. And like we were saying before the podcast started, we were chatting about like, you know, there's Chinese cable companies here who have got a booth that's basically the size of my flat. And it's like, how what are you expecting to get out of this? And how can you afford this?
Yeah. You know, so many Chinese companies,
It's clearly, you know, we saw it today. And, you know, we will dive into what we saw in detail today. But just the overall vibe was obviously, you know, the people you'd expect are there. There's also a lot of boutique guitar builders there, and they've kind of, a lot of them have kind of clubbed together. So you'll see like two or three different brands on one stand. Yeah. Or there's a dedicated boutique showcase area.
Yeah.
But the other thing is the size of the booths for Moore, for Hotone, for X-Vive. Mm. X-Vive probably had a bigger booth than any other brand that we saw, and I don't think they had any products on display. Or they had like just a little trophy cabinet.
They were demoing the wireless system.
Yeah, exactly. And all they had were just tables where people could have meetings.
I guess they're the kind of brands for a store that are like bread and butter. If you were basically like, right, we just need to stock a cheap thing, like stock it high and, you know, sell it cheap, basically.
Well, also the purpose of their NAMM, I think, is not to impress people like us.
It's for dealers. I mean,
it's for dealers to come on, or, you know, they're after distributors in countries, so they don't necessarily need a big booth. All they need to do is, you know, have a table they can sit with the distributor and go, here's the pedals we make, here's a catalogue, here's how much money you make, and, like, we can send you some samples.
Actually,
down the line.
One thing, you know, we haven't talked about, and it just sort of popped into my head. So basically, when you go, you get your pass, and if it's got a red band around it, you're a exhibitor. If you're a blue band, you're a dealer, and then if it's plain, you're like media, or you're an exhibitor
scum,
guest,
basically.
Yes, but how many? I barely saw any like blue ones, like retailers. Like everyone seemed that they were like a guest or media.
Well, I mean, there's so much stuff you can do without visiting NAMM as a retailer. Like, do you really need to be at NAMM? Or do you just have a relationship with brands anyway, and you can see everything you need on the internet? It's a showcase these days. It's a showcase for, like, you know, guys like us to be there, and it's a total marketing event.
That's the thing. I think guitar stuff has moved away from being sales orientated and is moving to a much stronger like marketing orientation
now.
Definitely. But it was good. I think we were finding our feet today, and I think tomorrow will probably be. I think it was productive. I think tomorrow is going to be, we took too much stuff today. We were like, oh, we're going to do this.
Well, yeah, we should talk about that a little bit as well. Like, I guess, you know, when we've done this sort of thing in the past, we've tried to do a lot of video content and, you know, doing interviews with people on the booths and or getting demos. And we just decided that we took all the stuff today to be able to do that.
Yeah.
And then when we got to the show floor, it was like, this is not going to happen. Neither us nor the people on the booths have the will to talk about a pedal for a few minutes and then do a demo. It's just not going to happen. Yeah. No one's there for that.
And then when you film demos on Sunday and the demo guy doesn't care and you don't care and the brands are like, just want to go home.
Yeah.
You know, and actually I saw very few people, like I saw the regular big guys just like filming, but you saw a lot of small people filming with just like a crap camera and a microphone. Yeah. It's like, you're not going to hear anything. It's like, we were just like, let's meet some people, make some stuff happen for the podcast, which is what everyone
definitely
obviously cares about, and the Instagram, which people are really engaging with, and, you know, basically just kind of get some better content for you guys, like post NAMM. Still give you lots of NAMM stuff, but, you know, make 2018 the best year we can for stuff.
And I think, you know, we're lucky in that, you know, the podcast is well known enough now, and the YouTube is well known enough, and Instagram's growing at an alarming rate.
I can't believe the amount of people that, like, we're like, oh, we love your podcast and stuff like that. And just meeting brands, it's like so weird.
Yeah.
Or meeting people that we've just emailed before, or just...
Yeah, and now they're like, oh, I'm totally invested in the podcast because I listen to it while I make stuff in the workshop or whatever. Yeah, but yeah, we're in the lucky position that we can say to people, look, after the show, could you send us some stuff, and, you know, we can send it back to you or whatever you want to do. And... it means that it takes the emphasis on us, take the emphasis off us, sorry, having to do it on the show floor, because today we wouldn't have got anything done.
No.
You know, we probably saw 10% of what we needed to see today.
Even though you guys don't necessarily, you hear us talking about it, you don't necessarily see a demo, we actually get to like meet and talk to people and like build a friendship. And I think when you're just like, as we said to one guy earlier, it was like, yeah, do you remember I spoke to you for 30 seconds last year when we filmed a quick demo on the booth? And they like, don't remember you. But like some of the people I spoke to last year were like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, we talked for an hour on a podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah, it makes a huge difference.
Yeah.
So what we should do is we should talk about the things that we saw. And we started off the day in the Fender booth, went to our good old friend, Jay Cross, who
he
got us into...
He looked very busy.
He was very busy. Very busy. He was just schmoozing, like, the whole morning. The whole time we were in there.
Schmoozer.
We were probably in there for an hour, like, looking at stuff, and the whole time he was just, like, talking to different people, and he saw the 60 Cycle Hum guys, they're shooting some video. And yeah, he was just chatting. That's what he does. That's his job
now.
That's his job.
And he loves, Jay loves to chat.
He loves to chat.
He's very loud and he loves to chat.
Yeah. So the Fender booth, we knew that there was going to be a lot of custom shop stuff. And let's talk about the custom shop first, I guess.
Custom shop's always a real showcase.
Yeah.
I don't know where this stuff goes. I remember buying a Fender custom shop book like 20 years ago and it had like loads of stuff in it.
Yeah. I think the best example of that was today, the pinball set.
Yeah.
It was an Esquire, wasn't it? No, because it was a one neck pickup telly.
I took a picture of it, but yeah, the pinball, I can't remember the official name. We just call it the pinball guitar.
Yeah, so it was. I think it was a one neck pickup telly.
Yeah, it was. Basically an Esquire, but just the neck pickup.
It had the lights from a pinball machine that were flashing on and off inside the body of
with
the guitar.
With the flippers.
Had two flippers on the front of the guitar and was like covered in pinball stuff. And then it came with a matching amp where part of the casing or part of the housing was built from old pinball machine parts, including the flipper buttons that were still on the side of the amp.
The Wizard amp and Telecaster set.
Well, there we go.
From the custom, from Master Built by Jim DiMarge, one of a kind. I don't know who he is. He must be a new Master Builder.
Okay.
So one guy built the pinball machine and then Yuri Shishkov built the matching amp set. And I realised the stand was all pinballs.
Right, I didn't know that at all.
I mean, Yuri Shishkov is the master at that.
The crazy stuff.
Yeah. Always either jeweled or just doing something crazy. But that, I think that's a classic example of the showcase of Fender.
And that is what the custom shop used to be. It used to just be just that stuff.
Yeah.
And now, obviously, there are some guitars that you'd actually want to play. There's a couple of bits that I really liked. One... that I don't really know what it was. So it was like it said one-off, please inquire about orders or something. So I assume this is like an experiment. Master built by Paul Waller. like it was called the Blender.
Yeah,
and it was like,
it was weird.
It was kind of somewhere between like a Tornado and a Cyclone and a Jagstang.
At first, I thought it was one of those weird electric tenor guitars.
Yeah,
I was like, oh, the neck looks really odd and the body looks really small. And I was like, what is that?
Yeah, it was a really small-bodied offset with two single-coil strap pickups where the neck pickup was covered and the bridge pickup was uncovered on a one-ply plate, I think.
Yeah.
So real, you know, obvious kind of offset pawn shop vibes about it.
Yeah.
But yeah, the Fender Blender.
Well, weird.
Yeah, definitely. But I love that they give the guys the opportunity and, you know, the team in the custom shop the opportunity to do that. Just, oh, okay, Nam's coming up. What are you going to build? And he's just designed a new Fender body.
Where does... Excuse me. I know this, obviously, dealers buy this because we said before, you know, dealers put their card name, their business card in the strings, and then one gets picked at random and then they win it. And then obviously these people buy them, but they're never played. There must be so many of these Fender custom shops like sitting in cases.
Yeah.
As collector's items.
But I mean, I think in the case of the nine neck Fender guitar that everyone's seen on social media this week, which had like everything from electric mandolin right up to a jazz bass.
$90,000.
Yeah, and I think it was a dealer in Spain or Germany that got it.
No, it was True Tone Music in Hollywood.
Oh, okay, right, okay. I thought it was a European dealer for some reason. But, I mean, that guitar, either they're going to keep it and use it as a showpiece in the store, or they're going to sell it to someone who... It's not going to get used on anything,
yeah.
Is it?
It came with its own custom-built case from Paul Weller.
No, in fact, the custom-built case... Jay suspected that the case hasn't been built yet. Apparently it was worded something like, will include custom-built case by Paul Weller. So, yeah, I think from what I can gather, the case... isn't finished or...
At least he finished it in gold sparkle.
Well, yeah. I mean, the best. The other thing that I really liked, there seems to be a new range of Fender Custom Shop guitars. Obviously, you've got Master Bill and Team Bill, but there was a few guitars with cards on there that said Apprentice Bill. So I wonder if it's people working beneath the Master Builders, who are obviously very busy, who are now stepping out the Team Built stuff. And it's kind of like a middle tier.
Yeah.
And the one that I saw that I really liked was the Custom Shop Tuxedo Jazzmaster.
Yeah.
Which was basically like a real fancy Jazzmaster. Curtis Novak silver foil pickups, which looked kind of really retro.
They looked like an old front of an old radio.
Yeah, yeah. And just the whole guitar, it was bound neck. Just a real classy Jazzmaster and something really different.
Yeah.
And I just really like the idea of these apprentice-built guitars. I think it's cool.
The one that stood out for me as, like, a standard one that I thought was great was, like, a new type of paisley. It's, like, a purple-flowered paisley over black. Heavy relics, so black and purple. It looked absolutely amazing. And then the old decor guitar, which was basically paisley, but it's like wallpaper from the 1800s.
And it wasn't a repeated pattern, was it?
No,
it was just a scene, basically, on the front of the guitar.
I mean, and you've got all the classic, like, graphic guitars, you know, that have, like, stuff painted on them and things, which I'm not really into. They had a cool psychedelic swirl paint job one, which looked really good. The other main one was the John Cruise series. They had the Blackie, the Olympic White, Jimi Hendrix, and the SRV number one.
Yeah,
but I always thought Lenny was... I thought the Sunburst one with the SRV and the foil, sparkly foil, was the main one, which they've done. And then they've done Lenny, which was the red one with the inlay and by the bridge. And this one's like a different one, a Sunburst one, but... SRV was like in a different place.
Yeah, I don't know. Because I don't know enough about Stevie Ray Vaughan to tell you the history of those guitars. But I guess it's just a refresh of some custom shop artist models, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
And the Hendrix ones were basically, you know, master built versions of the recent Hendrix signature.
But we didn't spend an awful lot of time there. And I think maybe we'll go back on the last day and
definitely
try and have a look at a bit more stuff. But the thing is with the Fender booth, there's just...
There's so much stuff.
It's like overwhelming.
Well, I mean, a couple of other things that we haven't talked about yet. Obviously, the new Fender pedals.
Yeah, see, I'd heard that they were doing pedals.
Yeah, I didn't know what they were going to be.
I didn't actually know what they were. And they're like actual like metal boxes. They look really boutique.
Yeah, do you know what the housing reminds me of? Do you remember that Greenchild FX pedal that we had? that kind of like bent aluminium, yeah, kind of that vibe. They seem really sturdy. The standout for me, I think there's 6 pedals in the range at the moment. Mm. Something like that, 5 or 6. There's a
I've got pictures of
a buffer,
here,
2 different drives, I think. A delay, reverb.
So yeah, 6 in total. So you've got the, and I've got a picture here, the level set buffer, which I thought was really, really good. Yeah. I actually liked that they had an on-off LED, but the knobs also light up.
Yes.
Where there's a little bit where it'd normally be a bit of white paint. There was obviously an LED underneath.
Yeah, that's really smart. Really smart.
The Benz, which was their compressor, yep, which was quite nice. The Santa Ana overdrive, the Pugilist distortion, the marine layer reverb, and the mirror image delay.
Yeah, so the one that stood out for me was the mirror image delay. Price-wise, I think it's like £160, yeah, something like that. Don't quote me on that, but that's the figure I kind of had in mind.
I actually really like the buffer. I thought, okay, the buffer was really,
yeah,
good.
I think that on the kind of the gain side of things, yeah, and the buffer, I think they're going to be sub £100.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure. No pricing's been confirmed, actually.
I think the only shame is that obviously to keep noise down, you were going through Mustangs with headphones, and it's not the greatest time to do it. That's why... We've like picked up a few guitars and demoed a few bits, but we've not gone like full demo because it's just...
You can't hear anything. Yeah. No one can hear anything.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, yeah, most of the guitars today I played not plugged in. But, yeah, it was difficult to judge the quality of the gain-based stuff. The delay, I can tell, is going to be really good. Mm-hmm. I couldn't tell you whether the drives were particularly good because, like you say, we were going into a basic preset on a Mustang with headphones.
Yeah.
And also,
yeah,
I think it was like Beats headphones. So, you know, not particularly referenced.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm looking forward to, obviously, you know, we'll try and get access to those and do proper demos and have an actual, yeah, listen to them. One other thing. Firstly, the anniversary Jazzmasters.
Yeah.
They're doing a whole range of anniversary Jazzmasters. The one that really stands out is the 3 mini humbucker one.
Yeah, that looks cool.
I don't know what colours are going to be available. There was no other information about it. Jay will probably...
Were they custom shop or were they just
standard?
I think they were just American
standard.
Might
have even been Mexican. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it was American, but yeah, we can... Next time Jay's on the podcast, obviously we can quiz him more about that because, yeah, you know, he works at Fender. He loves Jazzmasters. He's going to know the details. And also, we bumped into our old mate, Dan Grace.
Yeah, now man behind Squire.
Yeah, now is the European product manager for Squire or something like that.
And Squire Acoustics.
Yeah. Oh, no, is it not Acoustics in general?
Like, actually, yeah, maybe just Acoustics.
Yeah, another guitar nerd alumni going on to a nice little job at Fender. And Squire have basically relaunched, or alongside the Standard series, they're now doing the Contemporary series, which, yeah, are basically the standard guitars but with a few modern tweaks. The one that stood out for me, just because it was a bit of a throwback to my like early years working in guitar shops, the Contemporary HH Active.
So was this like, was it the Metal Master?
Something
was
like
that, was that what it was called?
Or the Showmaster? Yeah, so it was basically a... so this the brand new guitar, the Active Strat, is like a standard Strat with 2 of Squire's own Active like plastic top,
yeah,
black.
The Showmaster with the Floyd and then the matching headstock that's reversed.
Yeah, yeah, they were a bit like that, these guitars today. That's really what they reminded me of. So, they looked fun. Again, I didn't get tier one plugged in.
I think we'll go back because we didn't even check out any of the Gretsch stuff. We didn't check out...
Yeah, we haven't checked out Jackson. Yeah, there's so Charvel. Much to see up. But Fender have basically got their own floor, pretty much.
Yeah.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
It's that and pianos, and no one cares about pianos.
No one cares about pianos. Boring, isn't it? So then we made our way down to Hall D, which, yep, is where all the guitar stuff is this year. And the first thing, according to my notes, the first thing that we really swung by was Eventide.
Yeah, I think we were making our way to Ernie Ball because we had a bit of a meeting there about something that's going to happen at the weekend.
So what jumped out at Eventide?
The H9000.
Okay. So you're a fan of the H9.
I love the H9. And I remember a couple years ago, someone photoshopped photoshopped an H9 rack unit, and I was like, oh my god, is this an H9 in rack form? Because as I, you know, I've posted in a group, I've got a rack system on the go, 21U, got to fill those spaces.
Ridiculous.
But it's basically, it is a rack mounted H9, but not just one H9, 16 H9s.
So 16 H9 processors in one rack-mounted box.
And it's like an evolution of their 8000 series, which is like a pro studio rack mount. And I thought I kind of got that idea when I saw it. I was hoping it would be like a £1,000 rack unit.
No.
But fortunately, it comes out at $69.99, which I was like, what's $699? But the Americans is £6,999.
It's a lot for a rack unit, isn't it?
But it looked amazing. He was showing me some of the stuff on the screen. So you can have like four individual circuit paths and each one can run like 16 effects at once. I'm like, I mean, it was the most ridiculous thing ever. We exchanged business cards and I was like, well, you know, maybe we can get the engineer on the podcast and you can send us one for dinner.
Yeah, right. I just imagine that. Yeah, we've sent you the $7,000 rack unit.
Well, you know.
If you could really do it justice on Instagram, that would be fantastic. Thanks very much.
Yeah, I'll demo it in my home studio where I don't even have a proper interface right now.
Yeah, yeah. Good times. So, yeah, interesting seeing what they're doing, obviously building on the success of the H9.
Yeah, and
I can't imagine many H9 buyers are going to buy the H9000. It's going to be studio people.
Yeah, I mean, they are a studio brand and they have been for 30 years. I guess the biggest announcement from them was H9 editor now available for Android.
Oh, okay.
Which is one thing that people have been crying out for.
Yeah,
because it's been Mac and iOS only. So, you know, they were demoing everything on tablets.
Yep.
So I think that's probably their main thing for the standard commercial end user, not the high-end studio.
Yeah, that's
owner.
Probably the actual news coming out of there, not this like bonkers.
But I just saw it and was like, that was just such a cool thing to see. So,
on our tours, we bumped into Doug Cower of Cower Guitars. Which was fantastic.
This guy, I just had no idea what he would look like, and he looked way better than I just thought I could ever imagine. It's just like this awesome dude who loves The Simpsons with a massive beard, and he's like, I should make guitars.
Just make cool guitars.
So they have a thing at NAMM called the Boutique Guitars Showcase.
It's like Boutique Builder Showcase or something.
And it's for like brands where you might get a guitar maker and they probably make six guitars a year and every guitar costs £100,000. And they're just like some of the most ridiculous guitars you've ever seen. And Doug's building like far more like modern guitars, but without being ridiculous. There was one brand and I can't remember what it was, but the body was half wood, half like plastic mold. And it had like a doll's head and stuff and like dead like butterflies molded into
it. Yeah,
it
had like a butterfly like carcass thing, like inset in the guitar.
But Doug at Cower basically built seven of his own guitars, which include an electric mandolin,
a ukulele,
and then all of his main models like the Super Chief and the Thunder.
There was a Titan
there as well, all in seafoam green with gold hardware.
Yeah, and it
was one of
wicked.
The most impressive displays I've ever seen.
If that was in like the window of Harrods or whatever, you wouldn't bat an eyelid. You think, that belongs there.
Yeah, he didn't. He apologised for not having the Canyonero. He was like,
because it went to a buyer, didn't it?
He said someone bought it just before NAMM because he was thinking about maybe sending it our way, and he was like, I needed the money, so
gutted. Got it.
But that was one of the most impressive things I saw today. His guitars are incredible. Absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
So I think he's going to come on the podcast and talk about The Simpsons and maybe some guitars.
Yeah, I guess we'll have to at some point. Yeah. I finally got to try a Titan, which is something that I've been looking forward to for a while because obviously, you know, there's not a huge amount of places in the UK you can try them. And I was very impressed. After hearing a lot of people rave about them as kind of an affordable version of what Cower offer.
Yeah.
It was cool.
We put a photo up on Instagram if anyone wants to check it out.
Yeah, we did. That's one of the things that we were doing today is going around getting some Insta snaps. Obviously the finishing is sublime. Didn't get to plug it in because there wasn't an amp available, but wouldn't have been able to tell anything anyway because it was so loud in there.
Excuse me. One thing we should probably talk about, and I don't know if I've got their card to hand, but he was with their other part of their company, DSL?
Marshall DSLs. They're just, that's DSL. What they do on the side. They're
they
making...
basically, I guess you can find it on the Cow website. Maybe Mark's going to have a quick look right now. They make studio racks for guitars out of really nice hardwood, but they're modular systems.
So drsracks.com.
DRS racks. Yeah. They make modular hardwood guitar racks for home or studio use, but you can stack them. So you can do a double stack. So if you don't want to take up a 12 spaces, you can basically stack six on six. $399 were they? I think he said that's the start at $399 or
I think there were more than that. Oh yeah, no, you're right actually. The multi-way rack, the first multi-way rack which holds seven instruments. Yeah. $399.
So yeah, if there's any listeners out there who've got some high-end stuff and you want a really nice guitar rack, just buy one of these.
Oh, definitely, definitely. If you're someone who's got, for example, you know, like 12 or whatever, it will hold up to 14 guitars, and you've got nice guitars, and you are short on width space.
Yeah.
The product is the AB14.
He was doing some new, I don't think they're out yet, but he was doing some new single stands that looked really nice as well.
Yeah, which I think they were saying was about $100, something like that. I mean, that was a more basic guitar stand, didn't have the stacking options.
But this was really nice. But they did a five-way stand with a tabletop to it, which also did another, which took a guitar like you would a tech bench. So it's like a hardwood stand with a tech bench on top.
I think it's actually seven guitars. tough to tell, but so that is the BT7 bench top. So it's got a fold up neck stand in the sort of worktop area.
And then I really want one.
Yeah, $199.
Yeah,
for that. So that was impressive actually. Something that I didn't expect to come to NAMM and be like, oh,
but this
that's
is the
nice.
Thing, like
expensive guitar stands.
We've seen a lot of pedals today and a lot of brands that maybe we're probably not going to go back to. We've seen a lot of brands that are friends of ours and things that we're desperate to see. But you also see a lot of things that you go, oh, that's really good. You also see a lot of things that are maybe questionable.
I can't
the
wait.
Slapperoo.
Oh, let's not give airtime to the slapperoo. Just people can Google it themselves so they will know what the slapperoo is. After Cow, we went along to Stonefield. Joe Branton got to, obviously he knows the guys there quite well. He was there checking out their new stuff, which included two things. Firstly, the Stinger.
The Stinger.
So it's a short scale sort of guitar bass hybrid. It's tuned in kind of bass.
The thing is,
in guitar tuning.
Yeah, so it's 20 inch scale or 21 inch scale, I think. Maybe it's shorter than that.
I think it is shorter than that. Let me have a look.
I think it's like almost half scale. Four bass strings, two guitar strings, tuned E to E. But the four bass strings, which are the lower ones, actual bass strings.
It's 20 inch.
20 inch.
The string gauge is 13 to 80.
But the weird thing was, is the neck was wider than a bass six or a six string bass.
I mean, it's like a four string bass width. No, probably wider than that.
It was massive.
Yeah. It's probably like a six string bass width.
Yeah, if not bigger.
But it's this tiny little thing. It's kind of like mandolin size.
Yeah, I reckon for like some more ambient or slower stuff, I think it was quite cool because it's tuned in the guitar register, E to E.
Yeah.
I don't know what they were going to come out at price-wise, but it's just very, very odd thing.
Yeah, I was just going to look and see if there's any...
I mean, that's the thing. NAMM has a lot of odd guitars. Usually it's unreachable prices, but I think those ones were made in India, I think.
Oh.
Part of his new range. I think they're part of his new
okay.
range.
Yeah, because I mean, that's the thing that we should say. So one of the main thing that Stonefield were showing off were the F series, which are their made in India guitars.
Yeah.
And they were really good.
I thought they were great.
So I think they're going to come out kind of pounds wise. I think they'll be like $899 or $999.
But they maintain all of the Stonefield features on Joe's bass.
Exactly. Which Joe's bass is like $2,500?
Yeah,
maybe
I think
more
so.
Than $3,000.
It's
something
the
like that.
The channel back. With the etched Stonefield logo. I think the F series featured... There was an F and a G series, and one of them features the upgraded bridge.
Yeah, and the F series had like regular, like two-a-side tuners, and the G series, I think, had like the banjo tuners, like, again, like on Joe's bass.
Yeah.
So yeah, interesting to see Stonefield branching out into like affordable.
Yeah, I think
stuff.
Maybe they just kind of need to refine themselves as a brand before they went into the cheap stuff. You know, make the boutique stuff, make the ridiculous stuff. Which the other one was the Freak Base signature double neck.
Yes,
which was a. I just put a picture up of Joe Branton playing it.
Well, it was basically like one of the regular scale basses and a stinger together, yeah. Wasn't it?
Just absolutely ridiculous.
One of the brands that really caught my eye was Koll Guitars, K-O-L-L, someone had not heard of before, making a range of guitars, right from, I guess they were what they call affordable. They were about $3,500.
Yeah, affordable for them.
Well, right through to, you know, a stupid kind of price, kind of custom shop stuff. What I really liked was, I mean, for me, it was ideal. It was Les Paul Junior shaped, like double cut juniors, butterscotch blonde with a tele pickup in the bridge, and then volume and tone.
Yeah.
And just in terms of how they felt, probably the best feeling guitar of the day for me.
Yeah.
Bottlenecks. Kind of like real satin finished necks, perfect neck profile for me. I just wanted to give them a shout out really because I've not heard of them before. And they're looking at their site, they'll basically build whatever you want as long as you stick to their kind of body shapes. But they had, you know, on display, for example, they had the one that was the cheapest was this single tele pickup version of it, which was just, you know, like a tele body, like flat top, no carves or anything, right up to a guitar that was basically the same body shape, but was kind of hollow body PRS style.
Yeah.
You know, it was the same basic shape, but it was thicker, hollow bodied, like almost like German carve to it.
Yeah.
Really cool little company. Had a brief chat to the guy who was the designer and builder, just talking me through the options.
One thing actually that we didn't put on here, which I'll quickly mention because I think we saw it after them, was Milkman.
Yes.
And Rock and Roll Relics.
Yeah, definitely. Sharing a stand. Good to see the Rock and Roll Relics in the flesh.
I saw them last year. And they, in my opinion, don't make a bad guitar, a bad looking guitar.
No. Oh, man. So at the moment, they're doing like basically a 335 style guitar with lightning bolt F holes. And I think it's Filtertrons on there.
In pink.
Shell pink relic. And it's like relicked back to natural.
Yeah.
But they also do some color over color stuff because I think they had a sunburst over. Like red or something.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so good.
Yeah. They team up with Milkman because they're from the same place. And we got to see the Milkman. I don't know if it had a name, a proper name. I think it was just called The Amp.
Yeah, it's just called The Amp. That's what the product's called.
Which was their... And I took a photo of the actual specs, which is their basically amplifier on the floor. So 12 AX7 in the preamp with a Class D kind of style power amp. Class A tube design, 50 watts into 8 ohms or 100 watt into 4 ohms, can be used headphone, can be used DI out, or can be used into a cab, or can be used as just a preamp, has the full tone stack with master control and then reverb and tremolo, digital reverb, analog tremolo, and only 2.5 watts with universal power for use anywhere in the world.
For me, that's one of the coolest things that we saw because, you know, for someone like us who wants to do some recording or, you know, does a kind of multitude of different things. Sometimes there might be a cab there, sometimes not. Mm. Sometimes it will be, you know, we want to use it, might use it as a drive pedal, which you could do because it has a kind of pedal level output.
Yeah.
And sometimes, obviously, we do direct recording as well. It seems like the perfect product.
Yeah.
It wasn't mega money.
$799, I think you said it's going to come out. As still waiting a couple months. But
that's dollar price, $799. Very interesting product for us to follow. And that's one of the ones that stood out to me as like, okay.
I want to try it.
Yeah, this sounds like mega usable.
Yeah.
And again, you know, we didn't get to try it there because even with...
There's just no point.
Well, even the headphone output, you wouldn't have really been able to tell what it sounded like.
No.
There's so much noise around. So, that was cool. Talking of little amps as well, kind of across from there, we went to Greer Amps.
Yeah, so Greer make loads of pedals. But they have made amps, but they aren't making many UK voltage amps. They said that actually Chicago Music Sains, who do their amps, actually spec quite a few in the 240 transformer volt. But the one thing they had there that which they just call, I don't know what they called it. Did they just call it? I think it was just called Tiny Amp or something.
No, it did have a name. Let me see if he's got it up on the website.
Basically, a handmade wooden cabinet 3-watt amplifier.
It looks so good
with proper Mercury magnetic transformers. And we talked to the guy, the main guy makes them, and he was like, do you want to check it out? And we were like, oh, you know, can we take a photo of it? And Stephanie's like, no, you really have to plug it in. Amazing. He was like, you can gig with this. And he plugged it in, and he was like, yeah. And I mean, he had it cranked, and it sounded really distorted. It just sounded like really gnarly. And I'm like, oh, it's not that loud. And then I'm thinking, actually, so loud.
Yeah, yeah.
They had some guy doing some ridiculous bass demo about two stands down.
Yeah, some guy was like testing a 1,000-watt bass amp / PA two booths over. It's called the Mini Chief. It's in, like, yeah, basically... You know, if you saw it, you'd think it's like an old bit of technology, basically. It's in like a kind of half-finished wooden box, basically. But yeah, even at 3 watts, it was loud enough.
Yeah, and he said the only reason he's not got a 240-volt one yet is that he's waiting for the correct custom transformer specs to make one that sounds the way he wants it.
Right.
He's like, I'm not just going to stick an equivalent transformer in it. I want to make sure it sounds as good as I want it to sound.
Yeah.
With the right transformer in it.
No, it was that was impressive. Again, one of my favourite things that I've seen today. The show.
I thought it sounded great. It reminded me of the Matamp Mini Mat.
Yes.
Do you remember those?
Yeah.
But just volume and tone. I just think a great little tone machine for recording. Just
definitely
what you need.
Definitely, just really grindy if you want it to be.
Yeah.
That is a cool company. Like, just everything down to how they kind of brand their pedals and the pedals that they go for, right through to the fact that they were selling...
God, their caps looked great as well.
They were giving away denim baseball caps.
Yeah,
like
with
trucker
his face
caps,
on it.
With a silhouette of his beard on the...
brilliant.
On the top
he
of it.
He seemed like a really cool dude.
Yeah, we should try and get him on the pod.
Yeah.
I think that'd be him. That'd be good. And we kind of rounded out the day with some pedal stuff. Cicalis Audio Works?
Cicalis? Really sorry to... I think his name was Chris. He was the main guy who reached out. So was like, come by the booth and get audio demos. And we were like, dude, it's just never going to work trying to get some audio demos and that. But they had a couple pedals, the Funkify, which was their auto-wah with an octave down. And I watched actually a couple of audio demos before, and I was like, this is my sound. I love that. I love an auto-wah, and I love a good octave down.
They're from Greece. I didn't realise that.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
So that was really cool. And then the Galactic Modulation, which was 6 different types of modulation effects, and you could pick 2 different combinations.
3 different combinations.
3 different combinations of 2 modulations.
Yeah.
And then a blend control that... blended between one, so you could do like rotary and phaser, and it would either do all one way or all the other, or in the middle, and 3 expression pedal ins.
Yes,
ridiculous. They actually were demoing it with 3 expression pedals.
Can you remember what they were? Was it that you could have like you could affect 2 different parameter on each of the modulations then the blend?
I don't remember if it was speed on each one of the modulations and then the blend or something like that.
Yeah.
But I was really into the Funkify. I thought that was a really, really cool pedal.
It's not up on their site yet, which is annoying. I just wanted to check some spec, but yes.
But they were a cool brand. It was good to see them. Hopefully we'll get to do some proper stuff with them.
Definitely.
We took a couple of photos actually, so we'll put those up on the Instagram, I think, within the next day or so. We stumbled across Game Changer Audio.
We did, who are in a much more prominent position this year. They're not tucked like...
Well, they're not...
in
they're
the
not
back of the hall with trumpets.
Yeah, they were with their mate who distributes trumpets in Latvia.
Yeah.
They actually had their own band, and they were all dressed in suits with sunglasses.
I loved it. I absolutely loved it. And they were much younger than I thought as well.
Oh, yeah, I think that main guy is like... he can't be older than like 25.
I've got his name here. I'm going to say Ilja. Chief Guitar Officer.
Yeah.
I love it.
So for people who didn't see their great marketing video, launch video for that, it is a distortion pedal that rather than using LEDs for clipping or diodes, uses a tube filled with xenon gas that creates a spark of electricity, so your guitar runs through a spark of electricity, and that's what creates the clipping.
And you can see it looks like some mad science experiment, or it looks like the flux capacitor.
It looks
capacitor.
Like an old Nexi tube, you know, like the ones you used to have on 70s hi-fis that used to like... In fact, I think Ashdown put it on some of their pedals at one point. Do you remember those that had the magic eye?
Oh.
Was it Egnator?
I don't remember that at all.
They had the magic eye, and the harder you played, the more this tube like kind of... This was the same thing, but they were gimmicky.
Yeah.
They didn't do anything. This physically actually alters the sound of your... And he had one on display that he was like, it was in a briefcase and underneath it was all running on batteries because he was like, oh, I just want to plug it in so I can like take it around. And then that was really cool. We had someone demoing the Plus pedal, so they were still there demoing the Plus pedal. You asked about price. Did they said they hadn't confirmed it yet.
No, he said it wasn't crazy. It wasn't like...
Because we'd said when we saw the demo video, €350. And I think we said that to him and he was like, no, it's going to be way cheaper.
I think it was like half that or something.
Yeah.
I can see that being on a lot of people's board just because of how cool it looks.
Yeah. And the Plus pedal was there and the Plus pedal was still great. I thought it was really nice. And they're a bunch of nice dudes and they kind of want to do some stuff. So
yeah, I want to get in touch with them.
I think it's not finished yet. I think he said it's not 100% finished and they were still making some final tweaks to it.
I just love the fact that he seemed like he was in his early 20s and he was in a business suit with sunglasses on.
Yeah, and it was just obviously like, just love making gear, but I'm not really sure I know what I'm doing apart from that. I just know how to make cool pedals.
Yeah, no, that's... I mean, that company is... definitely going places. If your first pedal is the Plus pedal, and your second one has, what was it, xenon gas,
the plasma, xenon gas.
I love it
as your clipping circuit. Basically,
what happens if you like crack that thing at the front open?
No idea. Probably I don't just know doesn't how work poisonous anymore. It is.
Yeah, God. I'm sure it isn't poisonous. I'm sure they would be allowed to make
I'm sure
it.
Sure, they've thought about that.
Just because it's got an X at the front of it doesn't mean it's definitely poisonous. Yeah. And the last kind of people that we met up with, Ryan from Fuzzrocious.
Yeah, it was so good to see him because, you know, we've emailed a couple of times and stayed in touch. But obviously, I met him last year and then interviewed him on the podcast early on in the year. And then it was just like, you know, big hugs all around when we saw him. And it was really, because I know he struggled to get there. You know, he's not a big company and NAMM is an expensive thing to do.
Yeah.
And he was just like, oh, do you guys want to get audio demos? Like, no, we just came to hang out with you.
Well, yeah, basically, yeah. Yeah, he said, oh, yeah, do you want to plug anything in? And we're just like, no, we'll just take your word for it and we'll hear it later. But like, we're not going to do anything right now.
But yeah, he released the Octave Jawn, I guess you pronounce it. Would you pronounce it that?
J-A-W-N.
Which is a digital octave down or octave up pedal. So they actually had like it in a box with one huge control knob in the middle. All the way left was octave down. All the way right was octave up. And then in the middle was a mixture of both. And it's kind of... it's not fully monophonic, but it's not 100% polyphonic. He just said the tracking and design of the octave was different to anything else. So it latches and picks up notes very, very quickly, which gives it that like polyphonic feel. And I was like, oh, you know, that'd be great to, you know, get those, see those as pedals. And he's like, well, actually, it's more of an experiment to see, you know, how it goes, because we're actually going to offer this as a mod on all of our standard pedals. Because the one thing about Fuzzrocious is that you can have any of your pedals modded. They basically make everything is kind of like custom.
Yeah.
You know, if I want the Rat Tail and the Demon King and I want the extra, you know, feedback looper, or I want the anomalies, but I want the fuzz as well. And he's like, basically, we're offering this as another mod. We'll install this and then we'll rehouse it for you and stuff like that. And I was like, oh, that's really cool. He's not 100% on prices yet, but he kind of gave us a couple of rough ones, which we won't say because it's not fixed, but they didn't seem outrageous for
that. He also said it would be possible that if you'd already bought Fuzzrocious pedals and you liked the idea of having that in the pedal, you would be able to send it back to them and they could mod it for you.
Yeah, I like the idea of having the Feed Me that I've got, the EQ, with that in.
Yeah, like the ultimate tone shaper.
Yeah. Oh, maybe I'll speak to him about that. I reckon that'd be quite cool.
That'd work.
And it was great to see him, and I think he had some of the best looking pedals I'd seen today.
Yeah.
Loads of different colours, really cool screen printing. Didn't have too many of the hand painted ones from his kids, but I guess he was like, better play it safe.
Yeah, keep those. Keep those back. Actually do the professionally done ones.
Yeah, so it was good to see him. And by that point it was then 4:30. We'd somehow managed to get lunch in and that.
Yeah, and now just, you know, we're here again.
Yeah.
And Joe's gone to see St. Vincent.
Yeah.
And we're going to go out and probably hang out with the Tone Mob. And
how does Joe get
hum
to see St. Vincent twice in 1 year and I've missed it?
Yeah, well, he's
when
just
I went
that
to
guy.
Music Man, I was like, can you just make it so I can meet St. Vincent instead? That'd just be better, thanks.
I'm sure we could sort that.
And then we've got to do it all again tomorrow.
Yeah, so what have we got on the slate for tomorrow?
So tomorrow, you might be going to do like a small panel on Yamaha at 9:30?
Line 6 have started their own podcast, and maybe
where they got that idea from.
Yeah,
I'm considering when we went there, they went, "We're all massive fans of your podcast."
Yeah, but Joe and I might be guesting on that tomorrow, so that's the first thing.
Chapman, because we spoke to our friend Matt and we saw Rob and Rabia and Hannah and Dave, and they were like, "Oh, you've got to come back and get." Matt was like, "Please take photos of the victories while you're at NAMM, because this is the only time we'll have them all together." I think the company is just going from strength to strength right now, and he's like, "We can't actually keep everything in stock." So
yeah, all those guitars and amps.
Everyone who was working on that booth had order books, and they were constantly talking to dealers.
Yeah,
so we said we'd go there first thing and get photos of all the new stuff. I think 7 strings, Dave Hollingworth signature bass. New colours.
And some secret stuff.
Exciting. Which hopefully we will see before everyone else. And then we thought we'd check out Victory, which have got the Super Kraken, which is the 100-watt Kraken.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Okay.
Which I think Rabia designed, which is just quite cool. Beat Buddy, want us to pop over?
Yep, I can hang out with Beat Buddy. They're buddies.
Yeah. And they love Beats. I love Beats.
Have you read the Big Beat Manifesto recently?
You know, big beats are the best.
Get high all the time.
We're going to go to Fuzz Roches, take some pictures of the new pedal so everyone can check it out. We got some stuff from Ernie Ball. We've got some stuff to sort out with Ernie Ball.
Yep, some good stuff
Really hope it comes off.
Yeah.
Mattaverse, we're going to pop back and see him. He was on the stomp, his new pedals. I mean, we interviewed him, and I'm sure everyone has gone out and bought one because he is an amazing dude and makes amazing pedals. But the Mark II series, they look amazing.
The Warble Swell Deluxe
Mark II.
Mark II.
The Tetra Step Mark II with the 4 push buttons for the step sequencer. And then I think we're going to go and check out Kiesel.
Yep, up for that. Definitely.
Maybe have a look on the. I like Reverb there, but I like the fact that you can't really buy. You can buy the vintage stuff from Reverb.
Yeah,
and I had a load of Zappa records on the wall, so I want to go and check that out.
Yeah, Reverb has started selling vinyl now as well.
We'll go to eBay. Check out the
eBay stand. I guess they're there to tempt retailers to sell new stuff on eBay.
I don't know.
Who knows? So a lot to see, basically. We're kind of working our way through Hall D, and then at some point we'll go to Hall E.
If there's any brands that people want us to check out, then let us know. We'll go and find them.
Definitely.
And then Hall E, the weird times.
Yeah.
I think Strymon are down there, and Strymon's announcement this year was a Eurorack looper.
Yeah, yeah.
These guys have gone off the rails.
Yeah, yeah. I'm really looking forward to Hall E Day. That'll probably be Saturday, right?
I think probably the last half of Saturday.
Maybe when Joe's doing his drinking competition, we could go and actually do some work.
Tomorrow is the Sinusoid Pizza Party. Sinusoid Pizza Party, so we're going to do that as well.
Definitely. So much stuff to do. I'm so tired. Now.
I've been here since... I've been drinking since Monday. 5 days. Yeah.
Talking about that, we should go to the pub and we'll wrap this up. Another at least 2 days worth of NAMM stuff coming your way. Do stick around. I know it's a load of content, but there's a lot to talk about. We will see you tomorrow.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about...
Coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.